LGIM Talks is produced by Legal & General Investment Management, providing you with the investment ideas we just can't stop talking about. This podcast assumes a certain level of knowledge of financial markets and is intended for investment professionals.
Hello everyone, my name is Paul Pugh and it's my pleasure to welcome you to LGIM Talks today, where we're going to be thinking about late cycle dynamics. I'm joined today by Justin Onakusi, who is head of retail multi-asset funds. He's also the lead fund manager on our very popular range of multi-index funds. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you, Paul.
Justin has also recently won the Future Leader Award in Investing in Ethnicity Awards. Well, congratulations there, Justin.
No, thank you. It's a real privilege to win. You know, when you look at the people on the shortlist, their bios and what they've done is really incredible. So thank you for that.
Congratulations. I'm also joined today by Amy Alkett. Amy works with Justin in the multi-asset team. I'm sure many of our listeners, Amy, will be familiar with Justin. He's become a bit of an industry personality over the last few years. But I would imagine there'll be people out there that are less familiar with yourself. Would you like to just start by explaining your role within the team?
Yeah, sure. So I'm an investment specialist in asset allocation team. I mainly work with the fund managers, but also with the strategists and economists, essentially communicating the team's views and the strategies that we manage to our clients and future investors. It's quite a broad role, but I mainly focus on the retail and the wealth management side of the business.
And so I'm sure there will be many investors out there that will be worried, perhaps, that there'll be remnants of the 2008 crisis, which perhaps haven't been resolved. Is that something that they should be concerned about? What's happened since the financial crisis?
So I think there's been quite a lot of change from the authorities, policymakers, and the regulator to try and address those issues that were initially caused the crisis. I think one of the biggest changes is that banks have been made safer with tighter regulation. And also, as we all know, central banks played a huge part in the recovery by pumping it with huge amounts of monetary stimulus to basically prop up the global economy. This led to a huge compression in bond yields and probably one of the most significant effects that markets have seen since the crisis. Arguably, this has had knock-on effects onto other asset returns. I think causing investors to move into higher risk assets in search of yield, potentially one of the reasons why we've seen such incredible returns across pretty much all asset classes over the last decade, with many equities returning north of 200% since the crisis. In answer to your question, I think it's fair to say a repeat of 2008 with another banking crisis is quite unlikely. However, there's different risks today. I think the debt problem hasn't just gone away, but it's probably been shifted from the private sector to public sectors, but also from developed markets to emerging markets, in particular China, whose debt to GDP ratio has increased significantly since 2008.
The only thing I would add, actually, is that you saw a great amount of leverage in the run-up to 2008 on particularly corporate debt, but also people, and people borrowed too much as well, and it caused excesses in the global economy. Essentially, the government had to step in and remove this debt from corporate balance sheets and put it on their own balance sheet. And overall, we think this was important. I think one thing that has happened since 2008, which is really important as well to stress, is the role of the policymaker, whether it's governments, whether it's central banks, had simply become more central within financial markets. So that is really important when trying to assess risks and understand risks in portfolios.
So we've commented that we're now moving into late cycle. Amy, how is it that the latest expansion that we've been going through, how is it that it's gone on for so long?
I think that's a really good question. So as we all know, this is actually the second longest cycle in US history. So we're over 9 years long so far. It's longer than most cycles have gone on for. And I think one of the main reasons is that growth had been quite weak during that whole period. And inflation in particular has also been very weak, which in itself is quite surprising given that kind of the huge amounts of stimulus that's been pumped into the system. For a potential explanation for this, I'll borrow an analogy from one of our global economists, James Carrick. Some of the listeners may know him, that he loves fast food, in particular loves a pizza.
Loves it.
And he would kind of describe this quite simply as very similar to cooking a pizza from frozen. So we all know that cooking a pizza from frozen takes probably double the amount of time as it does from cooking it from the fridge. So potentially the global economy was just frozen after the recession. We were in the deepest recession, as I said, since the last 80 years. So maybe it just takes that longer to get back to the peaks. And also another analogy that potentially Justin might not be a big fan of, but maybe this could be likened to Manchester United post-Fergie. What do you think, Justin? It's taken them a long time to get back to those peaks.
We're not there yet.
So yeah.
We've got a bit longer to go.
I can't admit that I'm a football expert, but just to pander to your football banter a bit there.
So we've had a look back over the last decade. Let's start to turn our minds to the present. Justin, it's often commented that when the US sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. Is that still a relevant saying for today? And perhaps you can then talk a little bit about where the US is in this cycle.
Yeah, it's really interesting because overall the US is still the largest economy in the world, but you know, the strength of that US economy, the proportion, the share of global growth has shrunk over time. So it's gone from, you know, north of 40% down to around about 24-23% today. And since then, you've seen the emergence of China, which is now the second largest economy in the world, making up about 14% of total global GDP. So you have seen the economic powers in the world shift somewhat. But the US is still the world's largest economy. And one thing I would say is that the world is definitely more interrelated, interconnected these days. So it's very difficult for one of the largest economies to really struggle and not at least pull down the world to some extent. So in terms of the US being the largest economy is clearly the key one that we look at, a key barometer of where the global economy is. And the US is clear has moved to, or we think, has likely moved to what we call late cycle dynamics. So imagine splitting the economic cycle into the income expansion, so to speak, into three stages: early expansion, mid expansion, and late expansion. Then we think we're in this late expansion phase now, where the economy is starting to look quite strong. Markets have been bubbling away now for, 9-10 years. So we do think that the market has moved to late cycle. Now, the one thing I would say is that you only really know you're in late cycle once you've kind of gone through the expansion, gone through the recession. You can look back. So what I would say is you have to be humble and say you don't definitely know, but we do think overall that the market is showing signs of these late cycle dynamics. And you know, as the US is that large economy in the world, it's the one that you really need to focus on. But I would say China's been late cycle for a very long time, trying to stop growth from falling. So you really have got a dynamic where you've got two of the largest economies in the world, we think, are pretty much late cycle. But just following on from Amy's point, just one last thing to add is if you think the economy was frozen, and if you think that the economic growth, the economic expansion has been long due to that fact, due to us starting from a lower base, then you could easily argue that the late cycle expansion could go on for much longer. So, you know, I do think it is worth kind of taking a look at the fundamentals. But overall, we think that the market is exhibiting those late cycle dynamics, in particular the US.
In the aftermath of the 2008 crisis, there was a lot of talk about pigs, wasn't there? It's an old expression. Portugal, Italy, Greece and Spain. We even speculated back then that Greece might even be kicked out of the euro. What are your thoughts on Europe?
Well, Europe very much early cycle. You know, you've got recently you have seen inflation really start to peak up, but overall, Europe is still unemployment is still pretty high right across Europe. You've got the kind of the Brexit scenario hanging over the EU. You know that Brexit will, if there is a hard Brexit, it won't only hurt the UK, but it would hurt the Eurozone as well. But overall, Europe is still pretty much early to mid cycle. You could argue, some people would argue early, some people would argue mid. Given the inflation numbers, I'd probably say mid. The ECB is still printing money, still doing quantitative easing, still expanding the balance sheets, still buying bonds. But, you know, they are going to taper. They're going to taper later on this year. So it's clear that the because we've had this kind of this inflation, and because the ECB is looking to will be tapering later this year, then overall you could argue that the EU is mid-cycle. And if you look at the EU, China, and the US together, you know, you're talking about Europe, China, and the US. You're talking about 50% of the world's global growth. So, you know, those economies are really important in terms of thinking about where we're going overall.
So we've just touched on Europe. We've just touched on pigs. I guess it's ironic that 10 years later, the UK is looking at leaving the EU. What are your thoughts on the UK?
The UK and the investment of the UK really depends on what you think. I think about Brexit. You know, if there's a hard Brexit, you could argue that puts the UK back or puts them forward, I suppose, into late cycle. If there is a softer Brexit, you could argue the UK is, you know, just behind the US, probably kind of mid-cycle overall. Now, I think people can speculate on what will be the impact of Brexit, but I suppose our view is to focus on the portfolios and say, you know, what will the impact be on asset classes, on UK equities overall. You know, given that you have such a large proportion of revenues driven from overseas, we think the impact could be mixed. I suppose the main transition mechanism of Brexit is through sterling. We saw what sterling did after the Brexit vote. We've seen what sterling has done after the peaks and troughs, so to speak, in the negotiations. So it's clear that sterling will be the main transition mechanism of any kind of Brexit risk. So it's so important to stay on top of that, so important to manage it. And the last one is direct property. You know, we saw again, you know, post the Brexit vote, what impact that had on the direct property market. So again, you know, overall, we think that given the illiquidity risk of property, given it's done so well, that type of domestic asset could come under stress or could end up being more volatile as the negotiations carry on.
So we've talked about the US, we've talked about China, we've touched on Europe, and we've touched on the UK. Just to close off this section, do you have any other comments, perhaps on emerging markets?
So as Amy mentioned, the big challenge of emerging markets, and let's bring China back into the fold here. The big challenge that emerging markets have is the amount of debt they have in the corporate sector. Before the financial crisis in 2007, 2008, developed market economies had over leverage in terms of that they borrowed a lot more than their trend line would indicate. So overall, it's not really important how much, or tends not to be important how much countries actually borrow, because every country has borrowed and borrowed and borrowed, and every corporate sector has borrowed and borrowed and borrowed. It's where you are relative to your trend line. Pre-global financial crisis, developed markets were borrowing above their trend line. That has now been rectified, and I'm talking about corporate debt here. Emerging markets were borrowing above their trend line in 2007, 2008, and they've continued to borrow and borrow and borrow. The main culprit of this is China. So overall, you know, we're very nervous around the Chinese debt situation. We know they need to delever, but to delever, you have to sacrifice your growth rate. So at the moment, it's very slow. Where China trying to balance deleveraging their corporate balance, at the same time trying to manage that growth rate and keep it at the 6.5% level. At some point, they're going to have to fall back onto a lower growth rate and try to delever, because ultimately, one thing that we know can cause crises and cause credit crises is this over-leveraged corporate debt position.
So we've identified, therefore, that we've sort of moved into this late cycle stage. Amy, how does the market tend to behave in late cycle?
I think obviously every business cycle is unique and you can't necessarily predict how market's going to behave. You know, as Justin said, you have to be humble when it comes to understanding where you are in the economic cycle. But I think you can look back into historical data to kind of get an idea of patterns that have happened in previous cycles. So during the late stage, generally inflation pressure starts to build and growth starts to slow, which is typically a headwind for more economically sensitive asset classes like equities. And then this kind of precedes the correction period where you tend to see more severe drawdowns in risk assets like equities. So as I said before, this tends to make probably quite a lot of nervousness in markets because people are trying to preempt that turning point and can sometimes cause more volatility. I don't think this is all necessarily bad for asset returns though. In fact, late expansion phase is actually the second best phase for equity returns after the early expansion phase. And as Justin said, it's important to note that late cycle can last between 1 to 4 years. And given that our current economic cycle has been so elongated, perhaps this late cycle phase will also be quite elongated. So there's potentially quite a lot of upside to be gained from staying invested in risk assets and not de-risking too soon.
What actions can we take in portfolios, Justin, against this backdrop to try and mitigate any risks that might be out there?
Well, Amy would probably say we should be investing in gold, you know, because I don't know if you know that we're quite competitive on it in terms of blogs and our blog, Macro Matters, and the asset allocation blog. Amy, for the month of October, it was, had the most widely read blog on out of all of us, and so she's been bragging about that over the last the last few days.
People like shiny things.
I suppose in terms of the overall backdrop, what can you do to mitigate these risks? So the key risk for us is this central banking risk, that the central banks get behind the curve. And inflation starts to really move, and central banks really have to ratchet up rates. Why is that such a big risk for us? Because that's when equities and bonds would likely move in the same direction. Why? Because if rates are going up, you'd expect yields to go up on bonds, and therefore bonds to fall. But given the liquidity you've seen in the system since 2008, you'd probably expect equities to fall as well, because it's a reduction of liquidity overall. So what can you do in portfolios? Really, we think we could do a couple of things. So firstly, we are biasing our portfolios towards inflation-linked debt, particularly in the US, not in the UK, I must add. So half of our government debt now is in inflation-linked bonds in the US. Oh, sorry, in across the world, but mainly in the US. And then we're tilting the portfolio towards US dollar. The US dollar is still, we think could be a defensive currency in this late cycle that we're moving into. And therefore, we're tilting that portfolio towards the US dollar. Also, if the Fed is going to increase rates, it increases the interest differential between the US and the rest of the world. So you expect a flood of liquidity into the US dollar. The second thing I think is to be nimble. And volatility, if there is volatility, creates opportunity. Late cycle doesn't necessarily lead to greater volatility. It's probably worth stressing. However, given we've come from an environment of very low volatility, even a normalization of volatility to what we would perceive as normal, I think will feel like an increase in volatility. So overall, we think being dynamic and nimble in terms of asset allocation becomes more important. And I suppose the last thing to stress, and Amy's already stressed this to some extent, saying that the late cycle is where you can get really strong returns, is to stay invested. Don't pull your money out of the market, put it under the mattress. Why? Because essentially, if you miss out on some of those big returns, it can be really quite painful. You know, we've done an analysis which goes back to 1986 and shows if you invested £100,000 in 1986. £100,000 in 1986, and you remain invested, you would be at what, just over £2 million in terms of overall wealth. However, if you've missed just the top 10 days in that period, you'd be down to £1 million. So £1 million difference between staying invested and then not investing for top 10 days. So I think staying invested is really important. But whilst you're invested, try and manage the risk overall, which could occur with a kind of the normalization, so to speak, of volatility.
Thanks very much. And are there any final comments that you'd like to make? There'll be lots of our listeners that are dealing with end customers that have been becoming more and more concerned. Are there any final messages that you would give for those people?
I think we're moving into a period where being dynamic and nimble in terms of asset allocation is going to be key in terms of managing risk. And one of the fundamentals that we believe in the retail space is managing that money dynamically, managing it over a medium term basis, focusing on the fundamentals, because we think that over the longer term will lead to better risk adjusted outcomes.
Thank you very much. One final question for you. What's making you happy in markets at the moment?
What's making me happy? What I like in markets is when you get big dislocations in asset classes. And I think right now we've got one of the largest dislocations that we've seen for quite a while in terms of emerging market debt. You know, emerging market debt, hard currency, pretty low default risk, yielding around about the 5% level overall. We think relative to other fixed income asset classes, this is a screaming value. So overall in portfolios, we're tilting towards emerging market debt because we think, you know, on a risk adjusted basis, low default risk, valuation case stacks up, yield north of 5%. We think that's pretty attractive in today's environment.
Thanks, Justin. What about you, Amy? What's making you happy in markets at the moment?
Well, aside from gold, I guess markets in general this year have been really interesting. The normalisation of volatility that Justin mentioned earlier really kind of provides opportunities for our team and is a great backdrop to showcase the team's capabilities, in particular in our dynamic portfolios. And I think from a client's perspective, this is a good environment to differentiate the winners from the losers.
Justin, Amy, thanks very much for your time today. And to all of our listeners, we hope that you've enjoyed our podcast on late cycle dynamics. There is a link in the notes section of this podcast, which will give you a link to an article that we've written on late cycle dynamics. But also, I would refer you to our Macro Matters blog for more information and interesting articles which you may find helpful.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, maybe even a review, if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in Legal & General investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.